in 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Are you hungry for Android? Get all you can eat at the Android Buffet. We release once a week and discuss all things Android. Now here's Guru and Jerry.
And let's thank Josh for another exciting intro. You know, he's done it the same way every week since we started letting him do it.
One might think that he just keeps sending us the same recording.
I don't believe that. I think he comes in every week and, you know, gives it his all.
Well, he's amazingly consistent.
I'll agree with that.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I live in Florida, right?
Yes, I was just down there.
It's cold.
Not while I was down there.
It is right now, and I don't like cold.
Currently,
so I'm feeling a little under the weather right now.
Currently, it is 28 degrees in New York, feels like 15, and there's a light snow.
See, that's just inhuman.
Well, maybe I should go back down to South Florida, where when I left, it was in the 60s. And in fact, it was warmer. It was in the 70s for much of my time there.
It is 33 degrees outside right now. That is just, that's inhuman.
Well, you should do what I did last January when I had some vacation time, and I went to Florida, and it was 30 degrees. Go to Disney World. No lines.
Right.
Yes.
Now, I think if I'm going anywhere, I'm going to the Bahamas.
I'll see
what cold stuff's for the bears.
I'll see what I can do. So far, nobody's volunteered to donate a ticket to the Bahamas for either of us. But if anybody's interested in showering us with gifts for doing this show, I'm not going to complain. I don't think it's going to happen, and I'm not begging, but I'd be very pleasantly surprised.
I would be surprised.
Yes. You may need it more than I do.
Oh, man, I hate the cold.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so speaking of stuff that's not cold, we got some news this week. Is that a fact? Is that true?
Yes, it's hot news.
Hot news.
Yes,
hot. I know I'm hot about some of the news.
Yeah, in fact, I've moved one of our segments, the newer one, Market Watch, to the beginning in honor of today's news, which is all about the market. I should get some, you know, special noises for Market Watch, you know, something stock tickery. Anyway, Google has unveiled a bunch of new updates for the market. They're adding in two new categories, widgets and live wallpaper, and more categories for popular applications and games are coming.
Let me just say that if the live wallpaper thing is really nice, if they would put themes into a different category, that would be even super duper as well, just to unclutter the apps and games categories.
Well, they say more categories are coming, so I think they're starting to look at that. They're also going to do device targeting based on screen size and density, and they're increasing the maximum app size from 25 megabytes to 50 megabytes. So far, so good, right?
Yeah, wow, 25 megs is huge, and to double that's even big. But, you know, I guess if you're a graphically intensive game, then you need that extra space. You know, gives you some space for extra audio, extra video. But
think about Gingerbread, where they're putting in a whole new game API. I think this may be part of the same thing. They're trying to target graphic intensive programs.
Could be.
And then there was this little thing they did. They reduced the refund period from 24 hours to 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Also, in response to the gaming community. Ah!
Well, you think that was in response to the gaming community?
Well, I think it kind of has to be. And here's why I say that. I have read some blog entries where game designers whose games do not have, shall we say, a whole lot of playability, someone would download their game, play it all in 24 hours, and then return it.
Well, I could sort of see reducing it, but to 15 minutes?
Right.
I don't think I can get a sense of anything in 15 minutes on an actual application.
And, I think this is only going to hurt.
Well, and if it was just game players, why is it that they didn't just say, we're going to allow a developer settable refund period from between a few minutes and a few hours? Would you probably would have set your thing at 24 hours still, I'm guessing.
I probably would have set it at 72.
And, I mean, you know, just you have to consider Google wants their share too. So
yes,
but if you have a problem installing an app, if you have a slow connection for whatever reason, if the app force closes and you have to reboot the phone for whatever reason, it could take more than 15 minutes to do that. Or if you're called away while you're trying out the app,
15 minutes is ridiculous. It might as well not even be a refund period.
Which is,
I mean, now. According to Google's reasoning on this, the vast, vast majority of refunds are made within minutes. And I suspect it is because they download an app and it just does not work, period. They run it, it crashes, it doesn't do what they say it does, their phone goes all wonky, and they just uninstall it. And, okay. The 15 minutes might prevent you from buying a just piece of crapware, but the 24 hours gives you the opportunity to only pay for, you know, valuable software.
Well, not software only that, it's
considered valuable.
I'm more thinking from the comfort level. How many apps have you bought knowing that if you didn't like it, you had that day that you might have not felt comfortable only trying out for 15 minutes?
I gotta say the only. I mean, oddly enough, the only apps that I've ever returned, I have returned within minutes because they just did not work.
I certainly understand, but
I did one this the other, I mean, just a couple days ago. Oh, man. Do we have time for me to cover apps that I've tried over the last week?
I thought we would get to that later, but we can do it now.
No, we don't have to do it now. We can do it later. Anyway, so yeah, this irritates me as a developer and as a user. As a developer, I believe I'm going to lose sales because people are not going to feel comfortable, you know, trying out my software when they only have 15 minutes.
And I agree with you. And the question is, can you still do a longer period?
No, not right now. Oh, you mean refund their money?
Yes.
You know what? I had... due to our one of our other stories, I had, okay, let's see. Let me grab an order that was from December 7th. Is there a button for refund? Yes. Yes, I can. The oldest, let's see. Can I go back to November 24th? Okay, I can... I don't know if I can refund it all, but I can refund some money.
Okay.
Yes.
See, I'd feel better if the developer could, you know, had some control over an automatic refund period.
It looks like I can refund money as, yes. Of course, refunding the money means that it may take some while because it has to come out of my account. One of the interesting things about Google Checkout as a receiver of money, excuse me, is that they make deposits into your banking account almost every day.
That's a good way of doing it. I know people have been having some trouble with payments, but we're going to discuss that a bit later.
Yeah, I logged in to see if I was running into that trouble, and I'm not. But we'll discuss that later.
Okay, well, anyway, I think that it's a bad move, and I think that, you know, a few minor tweaks allowing certain categories to default to a lower refund period or allowing the developer to decide how long their refund period was would be better possibilities.
Well, I think that may be unrealistic.
Well, better than what they did, at least. Maybe more well, realistic, I mean, the, is a what do you think is a good number?
The infrastructure you need to enable a 24-hour refund period. And basically what that means is you download the or whenever somebody downloads something, you reserve the money on their card, but you don't actually charge it for a day, right?
Yeah.
So if they uninstall it, you just don't charge them for that. And But if every single application can have a different time period, then the infrastructure needed, the complexity goes way up.
Well, here's a question. What do you think is a reasonable number if they felt that it had to be less than 24?
I think 24 is a reasonable friggin' number.
Okay, well, let's say that they're caving into public pressure and reducing it. What do you think is a reasonable amount of time for somebody to really try out an app?
Certainly more than 15 friggin' minutes.
I'd say
give them, I mean, an hour minimum. Absolute bottom, floor minimum. I would say 12 hours is reasonable.
And I agree because, you know, in a couple of hours of trying a program, I'd make my decision. And bear in mind, I've never actually given anyone their money back. Excuse me, I've never actually asked for my money back. I apologize, misspoke there. But all these apps that I've decided to buy knowing that I could try them for 24 hours, I've ended up letting these people keep my money.
Yeah.
So I'm going to agree with you. I think it's going to have a negative effect. But, you know, they can always change their mind. In fact, just to use an example, Twidroid, which I had complained had gone to an ad-supported model, went back to adless, apparently due to public pressure.
Okay, does that mean that now you have to pay for it?
No, I already paid for it. I paid for it back when it was in the adless model to begin with. So they went to an ad-supported model, and then the pro version was just for no ads. Now they're back on an adless one with, I haven't looked closely enough, but I'm guessing the pro version is back. And they introduced
it's hard to do that. It is hard to go from free to paid.
Yeah, well, they started out with a paid version. They have a free version and a paid version with more features. So I bought the paid version. Then they decided that all the versions would be the same, except they'd have ads if you didn't pay, which annoyed me because I paid for the thing and I felt I was, you know, supporting the developer. And now the developer is saying that, you know, a whole different philosophy is coming in. Now they're back to adless. So I don't know what's going on over there.
Well, I do believe that you should give the customer the option. If they want to pay for the same product but without ads, give them the option. There are ads that I use regularly that have ads in them. I wish I could pay for no ads. But I figure they're just leaving money on the table.
Yeah. Also, with Twidroid, they're introducing the Twidroid Factory. So they're introducing themes. So that's their big thing now. My prediction is they're going to try to make money off of themes instead of making money off of the app, but we'll see what happens with that.
Points for creativity.
I can't see people wanting to extensively theme their Twitter application, but that's just me. In other exciting holiday news, Dr. Seuss digital books are now available for Android. The Cat in the Hat and the How the Grinch Stole Christmas are available for $3.99 each.
Wow.
Are you going to buy them?
You know, as some sort of odd coincidence, Saturday, I bought The Cat in the Hat.
Are you going to tell us how it worked out?
No, I didn't buy the application. I bought the book.
Well, I've been meaning to buy a copy of it in Yiddish, just for the amusement value.
Well, you know, it's time for my daughter to start learning to read and such. So, you know, The Cat in the Hat's a good, fun book.
Did you buy the multilingual version?
I did not.
Okay. Are you going to buy the digital book, which apparently has some sort of media interaction?
I don't know. I'm certainly going to look at it.
Well, you better do it before that 24-hour refund period gets shortened.
When is that going into effect? Man, that just annoys me.
I'm not sure exactly when it's going into effect. I know it isn't in effect now, even for people who got the new market, but I'm guessing it'll be rolled out probably sometime between now and the end of the year.
This change will be largely transparent to buyers, but will help developers manage their business more effectively.
I don't think it's transparent. Moving along, the Twitter client was updated to 2.0. Good for them. YouTube for Android was updated to include in-page playback in the browser, commenting, bug fixes, and more excitement. Voice search was updated, apparently to be more reliable. And Google Maps is going to receive an update that will include faster rendering, 3D buildings, offline caching, and compass orientation to orient the map with the location or position it's being held in. Now, that one actually would be good for you because you were saying that you go into places where you can't get a data stream, and offline caching would solve that problem. It would cache your entire route. Wouldn't necessarily
work. Actually, you know, all of that is really nice. The faster rendering, especially if you're, you know, flicking your way around a map. You know, 3D buildings, that's just cool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, compass orientation to, you know, so to help you orient if you're walking around, that's just, that's all good stuff.
Well, I just, and it happens to me all the time, you know, I get off of public transportation. You know, it happened to me a few weeks ago. I went to the Boxy event to unveil the new Boxy box. And I came out of the subway, and I didn't, you know, I knew it was a couple blocks away. I didn't know which direction it was in. I pulled up Google Maps, and, you know, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out which direction was north, as I hadn't been on that cross street before.
Was it at night?
Yes, it was at night.
Okay.
Well, even during the day, you know, you have skyscrapers. They sort of block your view of the sun, at least directly. It could be a cloudy day. But, you know, this is good because you know the orientation you're holding the phone will have the map rotate.
Or at least, you know, roughly. I mean, I know the compass when I'm inside the house is a little wonky, but I'm sure my office has got so much EM radiation it ain't even funny.
Well, you should have that looked into. There's a way to stop the conversation. Anyway.
I'm sorry, man. I got no snappy comeback.
Anyway,
I'm doing good to maintain my my level of animation this high.
Okay, well, Aldeco 2.0 is apparently coming soon, but it has been for some time now. But there was news that it will offer Adobe DRM support, which would allow for library lending, which I had been looking into this week because Overdrive Media Console, which I mentioned a few weeks ago, actually did release their new version, which allows you to download books from your library that have DRM. So I tried it out. I actually did download a book, and it did, once I set up an Adobe account and put the information into the app, it actually did allow me to download and open the book. There was only one problem.
What?
The Queensborough Public Library does not have a wonderful ebook collection, in my opinion.
Well, isn't one of the advantages of it being an ebook thing that you don't have to go to your local library?
Well, you need a library you have a card at. So I was talking to this guy on Twitter. What's his name? Thursby something.
Oh, yeah, that dude.
Yeah, I know you know him from somewhere. And he was telling me that the New York Public Library actually has a better collection. Now, as a city resident, even though I live in Queens and I use the Queens Public Library, I do have a New York Public Library card that I haven't used in probably 10 years. So I went online and looked into it, and there is a page on how you can, without actually having to go all the way into Manhattan or somewhere else to actually go and get a new card, they'll arrange it by mail. So all I have to do, according to the New York Public Library Twitter feed, they're nice enough to answer, send my documentation to circ@nypl.org so I can send them this card and ask them to reactivate it or send me a new one. I just have to enclose my something that shows my photo and or signature and current address. So I'll send them a copy of my driver's license, which shows I live in New York within city limits. Or I could send them my rent receipts or statements from a homeless shelter, or my matricular consular. They actually have a pretty good collection of things that they'll accept. A current school photo ID. Young adult current report card. Don't have one of those, but if I had a report card. Anyway, the app actually works pretty well, the Overdrive Media Console, but being as I prefer Aldeco, as soon as Aldeco does have the Adobe DRM support, Overdrive is going out the over window. I never really liked their app anyway. It isn't as full-featured, and I'm sure 2.0 will be worth the wait. I also tried out Google Books, and it's a nice little app, but their store doesn't, while it has a wonderful free and public domain collection, and I have every intent at some point I'll go and try to find books in it, but with the sheer volume of free books out there, it may be a while before I get to it. But the app is nice enough, but honestly, I guess I'll stick with Kindle because the books are slightly less expensive and it still works on everything because they have an app for everything.
That is true.
Yep. Well, that's the thing about DRM, and you know, it's a constant argument. If there's an app for everything and you can use it on any device, not necessarily because it's unlocked, but because they've made sure that you can use it on every device, you know, what's ultimately the difference? Admittedly, I'm not a fan of DRM, and I will support non-DRM formats when I can. But if my walled garden is available in, you know, everywhere I'm going, I can live with that at least.
If you live inside the walled garden, you don't care if there's a fence.
That's maybe a good way to explain it. But essentially, yes. And you know, I can still do library ebooks using my Android device or using my computer at some point when I can figure out a way to get Adobe DRM on a Linux machine. Never worked on that either, but should work. In other news, Xmarks for Android was released as part of a new premium offering for $12 a year. Have you ever used Xmarks, Jerry?
No.
Okay, well, I actually...
Although...
Yes.
Interestingly, we've talked about password managers before, right? Yes. I'm a big fan of LastPass.
Well, they were bought by LastPass, and they're offering...
LastPass bought Xmarks.
Do you have the premium version or the regular?
I'm a premium customer.
Would you spend the extra $8 for $20 a year to do the dual one, which is Xmarks plus LastPass?
Actually, I probably would.
Well, I've been using Xmarks for years to sync browsers because it does not just Firefox. It'll sync to Chrome on the same system. So all of the browsers I'm using and all of the computers all have the same bookmarks. It actually does have a password sync, but I'm guessing they're going to get rid of that in favor of the Xmarks, in favor of the LastPass one. It has remote tab syncing between systems, so it actually is, unlike, let's say, Firefox sync or Chrome browser backup, it actually allows you to do everything. And the new, you know, I actually did give them the $12 because I didn't want them to close, and I said if they kept open, I'd give them money. I don't really need the Xmarks for Android app. It allows me to access my Xmarks bookmarks through their app on the phone and then launch them in the browser, which is nice, I suppose. But I do have an idea for you, though, that I was looking into. Do you want to hear an application idea? Or?
I do.
Okay, well, I was looking into another popular bookmark service called Pinboard. Have you heard of it?
No.
Pinboard.in. That's India November. Now, what's interesting about them is I was looking into them. Somebody had recommended them. And so I figured I'd go to the market and see if anybody had written a Pinboard application. So I looked, and there's only one Save to Pinboard application. Oh, you saw the name of the Pinboard site, the antisocial bookmark?
No, the little tagline, social bookmarking for introverts.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to try this service. You know, it's a one-time cost that goes up by the number of users. So I think it's at somewhere between, I think it's 640 or something like that.
686 right now.
Really? Last week it was, I think, 638. But for each few people who sign up, it goes up a cent. So the idea is the more people, the more money it costs. So get in on the ground floor. But there's only one Save to Pinboard app in the Android market. And according to this, it has some issues. So I think, you know, maybe you should, it uses a standard API. I think it's based on the Delicious API. So I think you might do well if you went and wrote a Pinboard app. It doesn't sound like it would be that hard because there's an existing API, and get one that people like. You could beat out Mittnerwerb in the market. Not that I've tried his app. Look
at the API.
Well, it's apparently the standard Delicious app. It's based on that, according to the reading I was doing. But yeah. I'm always looking for ways to organize my life, and I was looking at this because it will import bookmarks from a Twitter stream. So if
you're, I guess I'm not real sure what this a low noise bookmarking site. I guess I'm.
Yeah, I think you know, I haven't quite figured out if I'm going to use it, but I was looking at what it's capable of doing. It has some nice features. Archive.
Is this like? I mean, to me, it looks like Hacker News.
Well, the idea is a very simple site where you are able to keep a lot of bookmarks that you want to keep for long periods. It also has a $25 archive version where it will actually keep copies of the sites for you. So if you want to keep sites for long periods of time and make sure that you have access to old content.
Right, but what's with the social bookmarking? Xmarks I get because the things that you bookmark on one computer, those bookmarks show up on another computer or on your phone.
Well, this is antisocial. This is antisocial bookmarking.
That's kind of, Xmarks is antisocial bookmarking. It's just for you.
Yeah, I think this is more of an answer to the whole Delicious idea. So it's designed to be what somebody thought they wanted, but Delicious didn't offer.
Huh.
Delicious is social bookmarking. It's designed specifically for that. But my suggestion to you is this thing lacks a good app, from what I can tell. So even if you don't necessarily like or understand the product, if you wrote an app, you could make a couple of dollars.
Hmm.
There's my suggestion for you.
You and I would have to talk about what makes the other app suck.
I don't know. I haven't paid for it. I actually don't use Pinboard. I was just thinking of using Pinboard. As I said, I'm always looking for new organizational tools because I'm trying to be a better person and more organized. I did buy an app this week, though.
Huh.
Would you like to hear?
Integrates with Instapaper.
Which I've also been playing with. So this is how I got to Pinboard. But I did buy an app this week, even though there were free alternatives.
What'd you get?
Well, I went down to Florida, as I mentioned, and I went to see my relatives, and I decided I would not watch any television all weekend, and I would just play with a Roku box.
Goodness.
Sound like a good idea? I wanted to see what it would be like if I cut the cord. So I tried my free one-week trial of Hulu Plus, which I will be angrily writing about later when I get a chance.
Dude, I cannot. Yeah, every other person's tried it.
Did you see me tweeting about it?
No. But you know, Hulu was in such great position, and then they just got hosed by the networks.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I actually think that the Hulu Plus channel on Roku, you know, they initiated a bug fix over the weekend that I downloaded. I think that the presentation is fine. It looks a lot like Hulu Desktop, if you've ever played with that. So it's now, and I was able, you know, I didn't have any problems with the playback. Whatever I was able to play worked. It looked, you know, clean enough on the screen. It wasn't, admittedly, I wasn't watching on an HD set. My relatives aren't in that level of enthusiast. So I hooked it up to it was a 27-inch CRT that I had it hooked up to. And, you know, the quality was fine, at least for what I was doing with it. And my problem was this. On Thursday night, I flew down to Florida, and, you know, I wanted to watch my normal Thursday night programming. So I took JetBlue, where they offer you a free television at every seat. Unfortunately, there was one problem. I got one of the seats with a broken television. Well, I got to catch up on my podcast listening. But so I get there and I figure, you know, I'll try out Hulu Plus and I'll watch the shows that I missed on Thursday night, like Fringe. I happen to find Fringe interesting, at least every other week. Some weeks are good, some weeks are bad, like any show. And
what was this last week's episode?
I didn't see it yet, so please don't spoil it for me. It was called Marionette. I don't know what it was about. So
Okay.
So I don't know if it was good or bad. It might have been bad for all I know. So you can get Fringe on Hulu if you go to their website free of charge, but you cannot get it in Hulu Plus. It's web only. So I don't get this.
So you're paying for Hulu Plus, and yet you can't get stuff that's available on the website for free. Yeah, because that makes a lot of friggin' sense.
Yeah, and it happened for half of the Thursday night lineup that I was considering watching. I went through shows. And, you know, I even looked at shows I wouldn't normally watch just to see which of the Thursday night lineup shows could I actually watch. And one or two of them were there. Most of them were not. A few of them weren't on Hulu at all, but at least I can excuse it if it wasn't on Hulu to begin with. But anyway, so just to make a long story short, too late. I brought the Roku box down to Florida. I put an HDMI cable in my bag, just in case, and I put a standard composite cable in my bag as well. And I packed everything, and I got to Florida, hooked the thing up, and realized I'd forgotten one very important thing.
What's that?
The remote control. And the Roku box doesn't have any buttons on it. So I was worried for a minute, and I thought I might not be able to do what I wanted to do. But I went online to see if there was any way to program a universal remote, because my relatives happened to have one of those, if there was a program or something. And I found there's an Android app. Since the Roku box is networked, you can control it over the network. So somebody wrote an app, actually several apps if you look in the market, to control the Roku box. And, you know, I tried out one of the free apps and it didn't work. It kept losing the connection, frequently unresponsive, and I'd have to rescan. And so what I did was I went and spent money on a 99-cent Roku app called Roku Remote by Greg Reno, which was featured on the Best Remote Apps for Your Android with Lifehacker, and it didn't lose the connection once.
Excellent.
So I will endorse it for anybody who keeps losing their Roku remote, or like me, is stupid enough to take the Roku box 1,000 miles away and not bring the remote along. Yeah. Anyway, I forgot to mention that earlier. And you were going to discuss some apps that you had played with this week.
Yeah. Okay, so interestingly, I don't know where my phone is right now.
Oh, I know where mine is. It's in the other room.
Okay, so I needed to submit some paperwork to work for you know, requesting vacation time because, hey, Christmas is coming up. I'd like to take some time off. And I don't have a scanner, and I didn't want to go somewhere and fax it to them because, you know, I live in Jacksonville, but the people I work for are up in Boston. So I had seen that there are applications that are basically, it's like turn your phone into a scanner. And I tried 5 different turn your phone into a scanner applications.
Did you find one that actually worked well?
No, not a one. And one of them was like $9. It was like $4.99 and £4.99. Ended up being like $9. Just, and I don't know whether to blame that on, I can only blame it on the applications because the problem was all of the scans that they made taking the, you know, with the camera.
Yeah.
They all sucked. But I could open the camera application app and take a picture and it'd come out fine. But try and do it inside the application and it wouldn't work. Or it would be, the quality would be extremely poor. So
you didn't find any of them that you liked?
I didn't find a single one that worked.
That's disappointing. If anybody knows of one that actually does work. You know, I was going to look at a few of those when I had some time. I just have been busy with a lot of different things and a lot of different forums. Then I tried to enjoy my mini vacation.
It just, I mean, maybe it is possible that the first, I started out with the 2 worst ones. So by the time I got to number 3, number 4, and number 5, I was already irritated.
Did you try Cam Scanner? That was one of the ones I was looking at.
That was the first one I tried.
Okay, so that didn't work out well?
No.
I know some people liked it.
Maybe, you know, I was starting to think that it was just my camera. You know, it's an 8-megapixel camera, but, you know, with so many pixels, you know, you sacrifice some quality. You know, megapixels is not the end-all be-all when it comes to camera or photo quality. But I could go outside the application and take a picture, and it would be just fine. I was highly irritated.
I am sorry to hear that. I feel for you. But I'll try that. Maybe I'll scan my driver's license to send to the New York Public Library to reactivate my card.
You know, it might work fine for that. But I was trying to take a picture of a full sheet of paper, you know, 8.5 by 11.
Well, it may be that the camera doesn't quite have the ability to do it just because of the camera itself.
See, no, I thought that. But I went to the camera application on the phone, the normal camera application, took the picture just fine. I got no explanation.
Well, if you find anything else or if anybody has any suggestions in that vein, we'll be happy to give them a shot.
I mean, I tried holding it closer to the paper, further away from the paper. There are some of the apps had like perspective correction on them. So I even tried taking it from a funky perspective. Straight on horizontal, straight on verticals. Fill the page up or the view up as much as I can with the camera. Back it off so it only fills up half the screen and zoom in. I was unhappy. It was a very unsatisfactory experience for me.
I feel for you. I have this place in my heart where I had hoped that something like that would work for you, because if it works for you, it might work for me.
I'm sorry. I wish I had something better to report. And I don't want to, because it could be me, I don't want to identify all the applications I tried because I don't want to give them any bad press.
Okay, well, maybe I'll give it a shot with my little get my New York Public Library card renewed so that I can have access to their ebook collection.
You know, with something, I bet it'll work fine with something small and with something that is not, you know, black and white. I figure, God, if it's going to work with anything, it's going to work with black and white text. Sorry.
My library card is color. But anyway, moving along, in platform news, Honeycomb will have new APIs to allow an application to split its view into multiple views, which can be viewed side by side on, let's say, a tablet, or one after another on a standard phone screen. As a developer, what do you think about that, Jerry? Jerry?
I'm here.
What do you think about that?
I don't know.
Okay, so...
Sounds interesting. I mean, hey, more options is good. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I think we have to see how people really use it. Since Honeycomb is still just something that Andy Rubin showed on a screen and not anything we have any details about, I think we have to hold off on really judgment.
You know, Android as a whole is still a very new system that is, and
but it is built on a lot of established patents, stuff.
Well, not relatively compared to, you know, programming languages. You know, C++ has been out there long enough that if there for any given thing that you want to do in C++, somebody has figured out how to do it. On Windows, in WinForms has been around long enough that for any given thing you want to do, somebody has figured out how to do it. WPF, Windows Presentation Foundation, is a new way of making graphical applications. Well, there's still really no, there are, for some things there are, but for a large portion of tasks, there is no real best practice because, well, it hasn't been out long enough for a large consensus on what really works the best. And Android is still that way. There's no real consensus on best practices for things like database access, how to lay out your views, etc.
I think they were sort of trying that with Gingerbread to try to adjust the UI a bit.
Well, it's not really something that you can, you know, change the API and it'll fix it. If you change the API, that just means we have to start over.
No, I'm saying that if you've looked at some of the pictures of Gingerbread applications, they're definitely going in a specific stylistic direction, which certainly other developers developing for the platform will mimic. So
well,
I think they're trendsetters.
Yeah, because there's, you know, most programmers are not designers. There are exceptions. I'm not one of them. But, you know, it's so new that we really don't know how to make the best use of what we already have. So, you know, this being able to split a view into multiple views so that you can see them side by side. I mean, does that mean you're looking at multiple views of the same model? Are you splitting the view hierarchy up? Or, I mean, what? I don't really know what this means. And I don't know what it will mean to the best way to handle what goes on. Because I am certain that with the API, how it is now, you can make the pixels on the screen look any way you want. So this is probably just a way to make doing something specific easier. But that something specific, is it something we need to do? I mean, under what conditions is it good to do that?
That's the question. I think some of that is tablet-based and may have less of a need on the phone.
You know what I would like to see for tablets? The ability to show more than one activity at once.
And this may be part of that. We don't have the full sense yet.
Are you familiar with Notion Ink?
Yeah, they released something, for the whole thing that you were talking about for pre-order, didn't they, this week?
No, not yet.
I'm
eagerly awaiting it. One of the changes that they made is the ability to have three application activities visible at the same time. Because it's a tablet, you know, bigger screen, and so basically the screen can handle, you know, dimension-wise, three separate screens, phone-size screens. I think something like that would be useful inside, you know, natively inside of Android. But this split of view up, I mean, that's, to me, it sounds like, you know, pick a point in the hierarchy and branch it off. So I'd have to see the actual APIs.
Well, moving along, I did want to mention Chrome OS, which came out over the last week. It's for netbooks and anything with a keyboard, and Android is clearly for touchscreens. Did you sign up to try to get a CR48, the Google demo book for Chrome OS?
How many times have I mentioned that it often seems like it is a single feature that prevents me from moving from one thing to another thing? Whether it be a keyboard or a mouse or software or a phone or whatever.
Are you upset it doesn't have a shift key?
I'm upset it doesn't have function keys.
Well, I did sign up for a demo, but I'll sign up for anything free.
Good luck. It looks like a interesting
I didn't say I'd pay
device.
For it. I said I'd sign up to get one free. And if they give me one for free, I will give it all the due consideration and spend time with it and talk about it. That they're
now, did
giving
you go
me a free...
through the little, there was a survey to find out how much you live in the cloud?
Yes.
And now, where were you on that scale?
I forget, actually. It was a few days ago. But I am in the cloud a lot. You know, I sync my bookmarks and my browser settings to Xmarks now. I'm on Twitter, and I could very, if not for the fact that it doesn't support Identica, I could switch to the Chrome TweetDeck, the one that they unveiled as part of the Chrome store, which is also an interesting concept. I could move over to that without having a problem from TweetDeck itself, which I use because it's the closest to what I want in a Twitter client, even though it's not perfect. But I live in the cloud.
I'm not even going to Chrome App Store. I mean, is there a URL for the Chrome App Store?
Well, if you have a copy of Chrome.
Chrome is my standard. Chrome is what I use every day for my browsing.
Well, if you go to one of the blank screens, you should see a web store thing. So if you open up a blank tab, there should be a web store app there somewhere.
Nope.
Otherwise, go to
most visited.
Go to Chrome
and recently closed.
Go to chrome.google.com/webstore then. And some of these are just, you know, special versions of a website, but some of them are actually applications. So if it's just a website, I don't really see the point. But if it's
You know what? I have been here, but I didn't realize I'd been here.
Yeah, because
I was looking for some. I rethemed my Google Chrome, and apparently it brought me here.
Well, it's in the same area as extensions.
That could have been it. Yep.
I've installed a few of these just to play with them, and some of them are just links to websites that aren't even really HTML5. But if you look, some of the nice ones, if you want a recommendation to really look at a nice app, look at the Weather Underground one, because it really loads up a nice interface. And you know what I'm really thinking about these Chrome apps for? I'm thinking
Underground.
What I'm really thinking about is what they would look like on a home theater PC launched as an app.
Okay, search results for Weather Underground and apps. And okay, so do I want apps or extensions?
Oh, you want apps.
Apps. Okay.
Just to try it. Because it's a really nice example of how you can get something that doesn't really look like, you know, a traditional website.
Hey, look, I have on my blank page. Now I have apps.
Yeah, that's what happens. See, now that's actually it's a special HTML5 website that's really designed.
Oh, isn't that pretty?
Now, beyond that, you can also get things that are more app-like. Now, the TweetDeck is actually an app, whereas if you look, AppBrain is in there, and all AppBrain is, the AppBrain app is pretty much just a link to the AppBrain website. It's a complete waste of time. But, you know, you have, let's say, Amazon Window Shop, where it's, you know, it really is where they've come up with a custom HTML5 extension that really is designed to take advantage of this type of, you know, app experience. So it's designed to be an app as opposed to being just a special version of a website. But even the Weather Underground, which I think is just a website, you know, they've come up with a whole new way of presenting it, which is very interesting and compelling.
I like it. It's interesting.
Well, I think there's a lot of potential in, you know, not just these HTML5 web apps, but in the whole idea of this. And I think as companies start to look at it, they're going to come up with new and inventive ways to use this. For example, as I said, Amazon Window Shop, which I installed, is very interesting. And a lot of these things are things that I'm thinking of would look good on a full screen. HTML5 apps, I think, may be the way of the future for HTPC, for companies to provide content without having to write apps for anything. Or for multiple systems. You know, that may be good and that may not be good, but I think it's an interesting development. But it's a little off topic. So moving back towards the wonderful world of gingerbread.
Excited about gingerbread.
Well, what do you think about some devices moving to the EXT4 file system? Well, I'm a big fan of EXT4. It's what I use on my computers.
Bear in mind that to me, that sounds... To me, there is one operating system, NTFS.
That's a file system.
Yeah.
Anyway, how old is NTFS?
A gazillion years.
You don't think Windows should have chucked it years ago and replaced it with something more efficient? It hasn't been updated in a long time.
What do you mean it hasn't been updated? It gets updated every time there's a new version of Windows.
I'm talking about significantly. Weren't they a few years ago going to go with WinFS, which was supposed to be this whole new system?
Yeah, it was going to be a database system instead of a tree system.
But EXT4 is the latest generation of the EXT file system. It's a journaling file system. It replaced
the... Oh, great.
Don't like journaling file systems.
You know what? If you got a fast hard drive or a solid state hard drive, you know what? Fine. Journal it. But when you're running off, when you're slow, when your bottleneck is the storage, don't journal.
EXT4 is actually pretty fast. I used to use XFS, which was a file system designed for large files, for my video playback. But since EXT4 came out, I dumped the XFS and went to the...
Now, what is the difference between EXT4 and EXT?
Well, no, EXT, essentially there have been generations. EXT3 was just replaced by EXT4 in most operating systems. I think it must have been one or two versions ago of most of the major distributions. And EXT3 was the first one to do journaling. EXT2 still doesn't. So there are people who still use the older version without the journaling. But it's actually a very nice, it's a very nice file system. It runs very efficiently. I haven't had a problem with it. And, you know, Linux will be moving on. There's talk.
Okay, it is EXT4. Okay.
Yeah, that's...
Well, okay, I'm going to send you a link.
Okay.
Link
away.
Bada bing. Okay. Now, I don't know the whole details of this, but apparently somebody with an HTC Desire made up a hack. And when I say hack, I don't mean like in a derogatory term where, you know, quickly thrown together code. I mean hack as in, well, anyway, where they changed the partitions in the Android operating system itself and drove performance through the roof.
And that's what Gingerbread is doing. They're switching the core operating system to EXT4. So this is the same thing that somebody's doing with a hack that's actually being merged into Gingerbread.
Okay. You remember what I said about journaling?
Yes.
Okay. One of the benchmarks that he was using. Now, this is... I actually went to the XDA thread where he talks about, okay, here are my... here are the benchmarks I ran. For his... the database section of it, with journaling turned on, it took 72 seconds to run the benchmark. With journaling turned off, it took 2 seconds.
So maybe they will... you can still run EXT4 without journaling.
Right. That was one of the his benchmarks was EXT4 with journaling disabled.
And I don't know what it is Gingerbread is going to do, but it is definitely a more efficient file system than you would currently get.
Well, what do we have now?
YAFFS. I'm not sure how you pronounce that.
Yet another file system?
Yet another flash file system.
Ah.
Now, it's designed for flash memory. Now, the idea is that switching to EXT4 probably will reduce the life of the flash, but flash is pretty robust as it is. Personally, I don't mind replacing my 16 gigabyte external flash card if it means that I'm going to get more performance out of it up until the time I do, and it isn't a significant reduction.
Do you see the difference in the benchmarks for on... I mean, now, granted, I don't know what the graph that's attached to the article means, but so that our lovely listeners can have a concept of the...
I've already linked
the
it.
Difference. The HT in this particular benchmark, the HTC Desire pulls in 500. 500 watts? I don't know. Evo, about 1,200. The Nexus One, 1,300. Okay, his Desire, which did pull in 500, after the hack, 3,000.
See what I mean? Again, you're going to have some issues with flat. Now, to be fair, I run EXT4 on SSD drives, and there are commands that will deal with, what do you call it under, trim is what they call it under right. Windows. Now, there's a you can mount...
But you don't have that on flash drives. You have them on solid-state drives.
Yeah, but it's the same basic concept. It's flash memory.
Right, but you can't trim an SD card.
Yes. What I'm saying is...
Or can you?
I'm not sure if you can. It's... the idea is that it's a design feature to do wear level.
Right. It's basically keeps track of what parts of the blocks are not used.
Yeah, but we don't know what... It says that they're going to do it for certain things. We don't know what they're going to build in to do wear leveling. So it might be that the built-in memory on some of these Android devices, maybe even the Nexus S, since it doesn't have removable memory, will have some sort of trim-like function. But you can, EXT4 does support being mounted with the equivalent of trim, which is called discard. I actually wrote this article about how to optimize your EXT4 mounting for Linux. After I got an SSD drive, I did all the research. You can find it at Gadget.
Well, that sounds like a page turner.
Well, it was, you know, how to guy. It's, you know, it's
you
more.
Know, dude, I'm just messing with you. The things that I think are utterly exciting, non-programmers had the exact same response. Like, yeah, what a page turner.
Well, it's not a page turner. It's what you need to know. It's, you know, it's a reference.
It's what you need to know.
It's what anybody who wants to do what I wanted to do needs to know. Anyway, beyond that, the idea is that you can still optimize EXT4 for Flash. You just change some of the mounting settings. There are a lot of different options for it. But overall, I think it's a better file system.
Okay.
So that's ultimately, and it's gonna handle performance. And that brings us to Developer's Corner.
Oh, do we have a Developer's Corner? Yeah.
Well, I gave you
threw in a couple things, so let's talk about this for a minute.
Oh, do you want me to do the music then?
I'm so not in the mood for the music today. Let's music next week, folks.
There's okay. My music.
So, Android Police is reporting that upset Android developers demand better service from Google after recent Android market payment issues. Man, if there was ever a title that was misleading and inflammatory, this would be it.
Go on. Their
Google Checkout, which is currently responsible for taking care of payments and, within the majority of countries for Android, had issues. Granted, these issues, without a doubt, cost several, if not a couple, people a significant, if not more than $12 worth of damage due to lost sales. But it had nothing to do with the Android market. In this article, it would appear that they're saying Google is not paying any attention to the Android market, that they don't care, that it is a 20% project, blah, 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 blah. But it was a Google Checkout problem. So the entire attitude of the article annoys me.
Well, I do sort of agree that Google's biggest problem has always been service, though. They've always provided great tools, but if you have a problem, talking to somebody at Google has always been something of an issue, no matter what product it was.
If impossible is an issue.
I think that's an issue. So, you know, if people were more responsive at Google, then people wouldn't have these hard feelings. Now, I was doing some research on Google Books earlier in the week and listening to a podcast on my phone, and somebody was talking about how they had bought a book to test their ability to read it on their Nook through the Google eBook store, and they wanted to compare it to what it would be like on the Kindle. And what it would be like purchasing through the Barnes & Noble store. So they were doing a comparison. They bought the book through Google eBooks and then found out the book they bought didn't have the right to read it, to get it in EPUB format, only to read it in the web app. They contacted Google, and apparently they refunded them rather rapidly and sent them a letter of apology about not being clear which books were eligible for EPUB versions and which weren't. So okay. I'm guessing because they're doing a marketplace there that they have dedicated people. But apparently, even though the Android market is called a market, they haven't dedicated people to providing service to developers, which is a shame, because developers are giving them, what is it, 30%?
Yes.
That's a good. Isn't that a good enough percentage to encourage them to provide some level of service? I'm not even saying it has to be a large one, but if you send them an email saying, I'm having a problem.
Let's be honest. Yeah, they're taking 30%, but they're providing an unbelievable product for that 30%.
I agree. I'm just saying.
How many users are they bringing to your door for that 30%?
That's a very good point.
I mean, it's not like you're putting up a mall. You're putting up a store and a mall. Well, actually, I guess it kind of is. Rent in a shopping mall tends to be higher than rent, say, in a store on the corner, and that extra rent goes to pay for, you know, the maintenance of the common areas, advertising of the mall. And, you know, you as a business user, you don't care about that. What you care about is you're paying extra money for a built-in audience. You know, people come to the mall just to come to the mall or to go to other stores that are in the mall. You as a business benefit from that, just like developers for Android benefit from the, one might say, rather extraordinary success of Android.
I'm benefiting from it.
And as do I. So I think 30% is kind of reasonable. See, it's one of those things where if you don't do it at all, or if you do it a little, then it greatly increases cost and complexity. You know, there have to be tools in place where people can go in and fix these problems. People that are skilled enough to troubleshoot the problems, an entire network of support personnel that can route the complaints to the proper people.
Well, still, I think they can, you know, do a little better in that area. I'm not saying that they have to provide a full call center or a full, you know, team of people. I think, you know,
dude, come on, man, at the size of Android and the size of Google, if they, any phone number for anything is going to need, I mean, it's going to have millions of people using it.
I don't think they need a phone number.
So they're going to have huge numbers of people answering telephones.
I think a nice contact form would do nicely with, you know, a rapid response. Rapid being relative. But I could be wrong, but I think that's the biggest area in which Google has a problem in all of its businesses.
Oh, absolutely.
Their biggest perception is that you can't get a hold of somebody at Google if you have a problem. And I think they really need to invest something in that. Not necessarily because it will be a profit maker, but because it's where they lose a lot of goodwill.
You know, PayPal has the exact same image. PayPal and Google, they're both excellent, excellent companies and excellent services until you have a problem. And once you have a problem, all that excellent reputation doesn't mean anything because you can't get anybody on the phone.
I've pretty much given up on getting the people at Google to fix that problem near my house where the street is drawn in the wrong direction. And that's a low priority for me anyway. But there are bigger problems I have that, you know, I've never
been. I agree that it would be nice if they provided a way to get a human on the phone.
I'm not even saying on the phone. I just want to feel as if, you know, when I have a problem, that at least in a timely fashion, that I know they're going to get to it. Or if I have what I feel is an urgent problem, then I really can, you know that within a day or two that they're going to get to me and feel as if, you know, even for AdSense and you getting service for AdSense. And in that way, you're part of a profit making thing and you expect something. I had a problem where I wanted to filter flash ads from a website. And there's no specific option for filtering flash ads, or there wasn't at the time. If one has been added and I haven't looked in a few weeks, then I apologize. But it said that there was this procedure to get flash ads manually removed. And, you know, I followed their little help procedure, and it kept leading me in their help documents kept leading me in a circle. So I couldn't, even though the instructions said that I could contact them in order to get flash ads blocked while not blocking image ads or text ads, I couldn't for the life of me, going around in circles, actually do it. So I had to filter all image ads for a while because I was getting this, what was it? It was this movie that somebody was paying to advertise that was appearing. And it was this big flashing advertisement on the side, and it was driving everyone crazy, including me. So for a few weeks, I just got rid of image ads, which is a shame because image ads are nice sometimes. But that's just my example of why I think Google needs to occasionally work on these things.
I understand.
Anyway, there was one more thing that I put in, pushing pixels on the Android market redesign, which was from a designer perspective on changing the Android market.
Why don't you take that one?
Well, I'm not a designer.
And I just said I'm not.
Yeah, and neither of us are particularly artistically inclined. We should find one of these days to talk to. But it was just a very interesting article because it was showing some of the ways that they'd adjusted the user interface. And they'd one of the things that I was really pleased with is that they were looking at the landscape view in addition to the portrait view and trying to address both of them. Because many apps, and I'm not sure if you feel the same way, neglect landscape mode.
Yes.
And don't really come up with a good way of dealing with it.
I think HTC Sense as a whole does not deal with landscape mode very well, or at all in most cases.
And for this, this is just a designer who's a user interface engineer who's been looking at the design of the market, which I'm gathering he was involved in. It appears to work for Google. And a few things that they cover up with. In the new market, there's going to be an interactive carousel where in portrait mode, the list of features applications is below, while in landscape mode, it's placed to the right. So essentially, they have these two areas of the screen, one which is the featured section, and one which is this carousel of popular apps, and they rotate themselves based on the orientation of the screen. And beyond that, he goes into a few things that are more of a technical nature, which I'll leave beyond me for a minute, and just, you know, focus on the design part, where they're really looking at how it looks in all modes and how you essentially look to use the available screen real estate without cramming too much in, which I think is a good goal for any developer to look at. And as I said, I just look at applications. I see how some of these developers are trying to put everything in there, and it doesn't work for me. For example, I was going to look at this at some point in the future. I've been trying to find a music app with really large buttons, and this has been an annoyance for me. The stock app and several apps I've played with, the play pause button is really small.
Hmm.
And it's a big pain in the neck because that's the button I want. I want my fast forward button to be little by comparison.
Right.
I want a big play pause button because I have it in a car mount. I have it sitting somewhere. I just want to reach for that big button and press it.
I can go along with that.
And I haven't been able to find an app that has a big button for me or lets me set a big button. All the buttons, the fast forward button and the or previous and next, depending on your preference, those buttons are the same size as the play pause button. And if you bump into one of them, suddenly you're 30 minutes ahead or you're on the next song or on the next piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pain in the neck. So I don't know if I should write to some of these developers and say I'd like one. But I think some developers, you know, they look at what they think is good. And in some cases, it doesn't necessarily make sense because, as you said, they're not designers and they don't have the advice of one. But I think the only other alternative is to solicit a lot of feedback and say, you know, how can I make the design better? Because people always say, how can I make the features better? And I think features, that's what I want. I want to be able to do stuff, but I think you can't neglect good design if you can find a way to avoid it. And not being a designer, the best way to do it is to go to other people.
Oh.
Feedback, which I know is a big thing for you.
Yes.
And I'm sorry I haven't provided any constructive feedback on the design of my soundboard. I apologize profusely.
It's probably because you haven't played with it. And I understand why.
Yes, I fully understand. It's going to become a running joke, isn't it?
It is.
I think it already
is. Oh, dude. Yes, you can pre-order the Atom.
That's what I said. I saw an article saying you could pre-order the Notion Ink one.
Oh, $425 for the Wi-Fi and 3G one?
Well, you know what I saw the other day for just $100 when I was going to buy something for my flight, something called an earplane.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the pharmacy, and what was sitting there on the counter next to the cashier was a Meilong tablet.
Oh, man, I so want one of these.
Yes, I do not want a Meilong tablet. I think it would be amusing to have one, though.
No, I want one of these Atoms, man. I've been drooling over it for... Oh.
Well, maybe we need to start a spinoff, Tablet Buffet.
Oh.
Note to self, cut Jerry's drooling for the day that I can make that soundboard.
I'm going to just wipe off my chin real quick. Man, that's a lot. That is a lot cheaper than I thought it would be.
It looks good, and I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, every time I keep seeing these new tablets, I know that someday I will buy a tablet. But what I would really like, did you see the model that the Chrome netbook is using? Where it's
the CR48?
The 100 megabytes that you get base, and then you can pay for more. I think about 100 megabytes free, even not free, 100 megabytes for a minimum price, and then a bigger plan for a lot more, I could approve of. Because 100 megabytes would be just enough for me to occasionally check mail, and anything more I can do on Wi-Fi. I'd love it if they had a 100 megabyte plan, really cheap for data devices.
Hmm.
Anyway, that said...
Okay, you know what? We need to get back to this podcast because I'm pouring over tech specs and wondering... And what's going through my head is, how can I convince my wife to let me buy one of these?
It's for work. It's a necessity.
Right.
Well, I haven't hard enough time convincing myself. You know, I'm admittedly single. I've said it. And I have a hard enough time convincing myself to spend money. And I'm much harder than I think I should be in some cases. And I somehow succeed in talking myself into buying stuff. So, I don't know what to tell you. But I guess we should wrap it up.
Oh, well, let me do a... okay, Developer's Corner. There's something I would like to talk about for Developer's Corner.
Okay, I wasn't sure
if one of the reasons that I'm excited about Gingerbread. Okay, do you remember me talking about how, I mean, we were talking about file systems and my belief, and substantiated by evidence, is that on Android, the file system is the bottleneck, right?
Yes, you mentioned that.
Okay. Well, one of the best practices, it's kind of like an anti-pattern, meaning one thing that you absolutely, positively do not want to do is access the file system from the from the UI thread. Meaning, excuse me one second. Okay, meaning there's a thread that keeps track of, you know, finger inputs and interrupts and stuff like that. You don't want to access the file system. Now, something that happens often, especially with newer programmers to Android, is that they will do database access on the UI thread. And that is, in all honesty, that is an ANR waiting to happen. So, pop quiz. Do you know what an ANR is?
No, I thought you were going to explain it.
Application not responding.
I hate those.
That is the pop-up that you get when an application says, I can't, you know, it's just, I don't know, the application is not responding. What do you want me to do, kill it? And typically you kill it. So sometimes it can be hard to determine whether you're actually accessing the database on the UI thread or not. Well, come 2.3, come Gingerbread, there is a new class. It is Android.OS.StrictMode. And basically what this thing it will do is you can set a thread policy or a virtual machine policy. And anytime you do access the database from the UI thread or access the file system from the UI thread or the network from the UI thread, you know, don't try and download something on the UI thread. It'll log this stuff so that you can find out when you're doing it. And this is such a big deal that I would recommend getting the new SDK and building your application for Gingerbread just so you can turn on the strict mode and then use your application, run it in the emulator, see if any of these errors pop up, or not errors, but log entries, and then fix them. And then you can move it, and then you can move your platform level back down to where it was, remove the strict mode stuff, and you will have an application that will not ANR. Well, it can still ANR, but it would ANR due to a logic problem, like you get into an infinite loop. That's something you're likely to find in your own testing. Network and disk operations are those things that, you know, you can't thoroughly test those as far as timing goes. Sometimes something that will take, you know, a split second will take 3 seconds the next time you do it. Which brings up another point that I'd like to raise.
Okay.
The emulator, you got a concept of what that is, right?
I played with it.
Okay. Absolutely. Positively, do not judge the performance of your application based on how it works in the emulator. Its performance characteristics are almost the opposite of an actual phone. Due to the virtualization of the execution of the application, CPU-bound activities will be much slower in the emulator than they will be on a real phone. However, disk operations will be much, I mean, like orders of magnitude faster in the emulator than they will be on a real phone. So these problems with accessing the hard drive or not hard drive, but accessing the file system or the network, they may not show up in the emulator because, well, the performance characteristics are different. So acknowledge that the emulator is not a phone and run your application with strict mode turned on. It's awesome. It's good stuff. This is good juju.
I have a quick question for you.
Shoot.
Can applications in Android tell whether or not airplane mode is enabled?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not really is airplane mode turned on. It's do I have a connection?
Okay, because I had my phone in airplane mode while I was on an airplane, and things were still trying to access outside of the phone.
Well, you know, often the only way you can tell if you have a connection to the internet is to try and establish a connection to somewhere out on the internet. If it fails, you don't.
Yeah, it kept trying over and over again. You think it would at some point give up.
Well, that would be a design thing for the application.
Yeah, I may have to write
something. I have noticed that Dogcatcher, if it screws up during one of the feed updates, you know, it gets a bad download or the connection fails for whatever reason in the middle of the download, it will suck up CPU until the battery's dead.
It's been happening. I have this one feed that it's now reporting too many redirects on, which is a known problem, and it's killing my battery during the day. So I may unsubscribe to that feed, much as I don't want to, because I like listening to it.
Just, may I ask which one it is?
It's not yours.
No, but maybe it's one that I'm listening, that I listen to.
Oh, it's
You have tracked it down to the actual stream, whereas I haven't.
Yeah, in this case, it won't download it anymore. They're running their thing through several redirects for stat gathering.
Well, and I am. Send me the name of the...
Yeah, let me just see.
Or do you not want me to know what you listen to?
No, I'll tell you one. It's one of many I listen to. But it's not the only one that has this problem, because I looked on Dogcatcher, and apparently the problem is multiple statistics. I was thinking of reporting this specific one so that the developer could look at it, but there are several other ones that have been having the same problem. I think Engadget was having it at one point. So if you look and search for Dogcatcher and the command too many redirects, then you'll see that it's a common problem with certain feeds, and...
I was just troubleshooting, a completely different section of the universe, and the cause was too many redirects. What was I working on where that was the cause of the problem? I don't know, but that's interesting.
Yeah, and I looked at I did a manual load of that feed, and it does go through several redirects before it gets to the actual file name. And it's a pain, but what can you do? Other than write the developer and say, this feed is failing, please fix it because I want to listen to my podcast.
Right.
But in the meantime, I have plenty of other podcasts to catch up on. I was just listening to a fascinating discussion of prohibition. I like history. I admit it. Anyway.
Okay. I was trying to think of something clever to respond to the prohibition thing, but my brain totally failed me.
I'm sorry, I have not yet listened to the latest HTTP-centric, which I know came out.
Yes, it was Friday. Or Saturday. Sunday. It was Sunday we recorded it.
Yeah. Did anybody insult Linux or MythTV this time?
Actually, no. Okay. It was... Okay. Wow. Was this a podcast unlike any other we've done? This was a guy running an HTPC, a tunerless HTPC, on a Mac Mini.
I've heard of people doing that. That's not uncommon.
Using XBMC.
Heard of that too.
XBMC on a Mac?
More people.
Okay, to me, this is just like running Android on an iPhone. Yeah, I know it's possible, but Xbox, Microsoft. Now, I know XBMC is not a Microsoft product, but its origins are on the Xbox, which is.
And it doesn't support the Xbox anymore, which is the
irony. Right? We brought that up. That's so funny. XBMC is no longer the Xbox Media Center. Now it's just XBMC because it doesn't support the Xbox.
It outgrew it. But I'm not the only one who finds that funny, and I'm looking forward to listening to the program. You know that I am a regular listener and was a listener for reasons other than the fact that I spend so much time talking to you and want to support you in your other endeavors.
Well, I really shouldn't say anything.
Well, that's how we first met.
The Digital Media Zone is going to have a holiday spectacular, I believe, on the 28th.
Am I invited?
Where we are going to have the host of all of the shows on the together.
Oh, well, I'm not a host of any of their shows, but can I come?
I believe it's going to be a live. It's going to be a live stream. So I'm almost certain we're going to be inviting just about everybody.
Okay. Well, I'm eager to. Some of those people I've never talked to in person. I've just annoyed them on Twitter. aside from heckling the people at Scene in HD and heckling your co-host on HTP Centric, and who else have I heckled? Did I heckle any of the other people at the Josh Pollard? Can't forget him. We've heckled him enough, haven't we?
Speaking of Josh, why don't we go ahead and cut this?
Yeah, let's.
Josh, please take us out of here, man. I'm tired.
Me too.
If you'd like to leave a voicemail for us, you can call 201-2-WENICA. That's 201-293-6322. You can send us an email at podcast@androidbuffet.com or use the contact form on the website. You can follow us on Twitter @AndroidBuffet. Guru is the editor of Gadget Wisdom at www.gadgetwisdom.com or on Twitter @GadgetWisdom. Jerry is the creator of Show Analyzer and the co-host of the monthly podcast HTP Centric. You can find him at jerry.jones@gmail.com or on Twitter @Jerry_Jones. My name is Josh Pollard, and now a final word from Guru and Jerry.
And thank you, Josh.
Thank you, dude.
And we'll see you soon.
Have a good weekend, folks.
Android Buffet is a project of the Wenica Media Group at wenica.com, creators of quality online content. Android Buffet is also a member of the Tech Podcast Network. Find more fine tech-related shows at techpodcast.com.